Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome to our next episode of Chosen Voices, a podcast created by Chosen Vessels seeking to encourage, equip, and empower leaders in ministry around the globe. I'm your host, Becca Baxter, and this is Chosen Voices. Today on the podcast, we have our first ever return guest. When Robert McClendon and I sat down for the first time a couple months ago, we chatted all about preparing and debriefing from the mission field and for the mission field well. Today, we're talking all about engaging youth in cross-cultural missions and ministry, and I think you're really going to love it. Robert has lots of experience working with youth as well as on the mission field, and I'm really excited for him to put those two things together and share with us how to do that well. Here's part two of my conversation with Robert McClendon. Welcome back, Robert. I'm glad to have you back on the podcast this week. Last time we talked about all kinds of stuff. Trauma on the mission field, preparing for short-term, intermediate-term, coming home. Talked about all kinds of stuff. And so today we're going to talk a little bit more directed towards taking youth on short-term trips. And I wanted to ask you about this because I think that there are really important things to keep in mind when you are taking a minor out of the country to serve cross-culturally.
Oh, for sure.
And there are some great ways to do that, and there are also some really poor ways to do that. And so I wanted to talk about effective ways to allow opportunity for young people to engage in cross-cultural service and have their eyes open to the global church and the world, but also, you know, making sure they're prepared for that and do it in an effective and honoring way. So,
all right, it's good.
So, we'll just start from the beginning. Before you take a team on a trip, what do you do?
You pray and ask the Lord where you should go, or if you should go. That's the first thing. The churches I've always been a part of in ministry when taking students on trips were always good about helping direct the expectations for trips. And so that's always been helpful. And then that and my own failures have helped shape better trips later in ministry. So that's also good. But the big thing you do is you gather the information, you get everything you need to know, and then you start preparing. And so for me, each team I took always had 4 to 5 months of prep before we went. And so that was usually, we would start out with team meetings every other week and then boil it down to weekly the closer we got. And part of that was because this is going to be a team of people traveling sometimes to Europe or, I never took a youth team past Eastern Europe, but that's a lot of flying. It's a lot of time you're together. You're spending 2 weeks, if not more, in close, confined areas with people. They have to gel well and they have to get to know each other. And working with teens is largely dramatic. Everyone has their own group that they're a part of. And there's the guy that thinks he's a part of everybody's group. And then there's the girl that is a part of everybody's group. And so everyone has to get along. And so if you start early, you have the opportunity to build that cohesion. And so each team meeting always had some element of worship, some element of teaching, and then some element of preparation for the trip itself. And I spend a lot of time early on going through things like the love languages of the different people in the group. Well, everyone will take the teenager test and we'll go around and we'll talk how that affects you and how it's going to affect everybody else. How when I say this to you, this is what I actually mean, right? Mm-hmm. And then team building activities, getting people together who usually outside of this group don't associate and they have to learn to associate with each other. That's the goal of starting so early, is that by the time they get there, they need to be a good unit of people who can exist together in the same realm. So that's first. Early prep, and that also helps you get the practical side of the work done. With a lot of trips you take with teenagers, you're oftentimes in a foreign country doing like vacation Bible school style stuff. Mm-hmm. And we always want to be, I want to say we want to be creative. I'm not a creative person, and I don't do little children. I've always done teenagers. And so I always had to bring someone on who was better with kids, the youngins. And that's my South Georgia, the youngins. So I wanted to help with the youngins over there in that other country. And so then usually someone who had like a teaching background or something in early childhood so that they could help build a curriculum. So we wanted to be purposeful and strategized. And we don't want to do the same thing that the team did before that went. In our last podcast, we talked about how, you know, you get there and the kids are already wearing the salvation bracelets from the two teams before. You're going to come do again with them. They could tell you the story and put the bracelet together better than you can because they've heard it every week over the summer for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And so you want to do something different. You want to do something out of the box and you want to do something deep. You don't want to keep it service level. And so there was always an element of being creative, and the students are so much more creative than I am. Just in the way they dress, the things they say, I become very irrelevant very quickly when it comes to trends. So I put a lot of it in their hands. Like, what do you think would be cool? And so then we divide and conquer. Well, I always want someone to go who can lead worship, whether it's a student or an adult I have to recruit in. And then there will always be some element of teaching. There will be something spiritual that happens. And that has to be woven through pretty much every aspect. So you'll have a group of kids who are going to take care of the games. And so you put those weirdos together and let them run with it. And then you have to come back and go, we're not going to take knives on a plane and play that game or fire or whatever it is they start doing. And then you've got the team who are going to be, you know, the teaching. They're going to be the rock solid. And kind of our rule when we did youth mission trips is that every student was going to teach. And not every student obviously wants to do that, but you're going to. And you'd be surprised the kids that finally have a natural knack at it and didn't think they were going to do real well. And they get super nervous and over dramatic about it. But at the end, they're like, that was really cool. I'm glad I did that.
So why do you do that? Why is that?
Oh, because it's about developing the students that are going. Like, it's weird. So I've done youth trips and I've done like young adult and college trips. Mm-hmm. And so there's two different thoughts that go, there's one thought that goes differently in each. And so for students that I'm taking on a mission trip, the high school and students, it's, you know, I'm here for you to help you facilitate the things we'll be doing. Mm-hmm. And so you are my primary goal in developing you and pushing you forward in your walk with God and showing that you've got these gifts and they're unlocking and I see them. And so let's put them out there on display and show you that you can do this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, and so obviously you don't want to hurt the process that the missionary has going on and their ministry and all that stuff, but you want to give kids the opportunity to walk in their callings and walk in the deeper things. And so you give them the opportunity to do that. The opposite of that is when you take young adults and college students and you're like, you guys are adults. And if you do anything to jeopardize what the missionary's got going on, you're going home. So, I'm not here for you. I'm here for those kids that we're going to now.
Yeah.
And so those are kind of the different thoughts I had behind each, that when you're taking adults and young adults, they oftentimes need just as much facilitation, if not more, but the goal is not for their, you know, development. That'll be a side effect, mm-hmm. but it's more preparing them for, we're going to go to these kids. These kids are the main goal. You're not the main goal. The kids are. And with my students, it was always, you know, it was both and. And so that's why you do. That's why you give them the opportunity to fail.
Yeah.
And they never do. They always do good. And you help them and you cultivate that and you walk with them as you hear, okay, you were going to say that to this kid. Okay, well, instead of that, let's say something a little different. And you help them formulate and they come back excited. They feel like they had some ownership and they did something and it was out of their comfort zone. And God moved on this in a massive way because you did this. And so, and that's what shapes them into the next step, I think, in their walk with God. They come back and like, I can do things I couldn't do before.
Mm.
Even if it's eating the local food, I can eat things now that I never would have tried before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's part of the prep, getting early in, getting them together, giving them the responsibilities, making everyone take part. No one's on the sidelines on a mission trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they know that going into it. After the first meeting, all the parents know, this is what your kid's going to be doing. This is how we're going to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And so the expectations are laid out pretty clearly. You know, also a part of starting early is, you know, I always like to do somewhat of a discipleship with the students, you know, so you have like the group and then individually, you know, I have them all sign little covenants of, I'm going to live above reproach. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to drink on the weekends. I'm not going to smoke weed, you know, all the things that kids deal with. And to be honest with you, if a kid slips up, it doesn't mean they're off the team. Mm-hmm. It means we're going to look at that, talk about it, and get even closer. And so it's even more the development of the student. And then there's always, usually, I'm not going to say 100%, but on most trips, there's a mercy pick. It's the kid that shouldn't be going that you're going to let go because you feel like God has something very special for them. And sometimes it's because you see more in them than they see. And they don't always live up to that on the trip. And that can be disheartening. But, you know, giving someone the opportunity, leading the horse to the water rather than making them drink. But there's always those students that you take for sure.
Yeah. It's so interesting. People have such interesting pushback to youth mission trips sometimes.
Yeah.
And what I think is really interesting is most of the time, if someone is going to serve long-term at some point in their entire walk or lifetime, they will have started somewhere. They will have started going on a short-term trip. So what do you think are the benefits of a young person going on a short-term trip, starting, you know, early high school?
I think it opens their world up to so much more. We all as teenagers are punks. It's just the definition. It just goes hand in hand, right? And there's something that you're just opened up to, like, oh, there's a group of people that live this way. Oh, they don't have what I have. And you know that. Like, you could say that starving kids in Africa, but until you see a starving child in Africa and the pain and what they're going through and how that's happening, like, it's just a cliche until then. And now it's like, oh, there are actually people not eating a meal today. Mm-hmm. And that changes your perspective, your outlook on life, and it causes you to mature really quickly and to deal with some things very fast. And so part of the process of going into a trip is they need to know they're going to see a starving child, or they need to know that you're going to see like 15 people living in a closet on a dirt floor. Mm-hmm. Because that'll wreck a kid, as a teenager, a student up when they get there and they see that. And that can be some of the trauma and crisis that you face as a student going on a mission trip, that they've changed and now asking questions and where is God or why don't people care? And so you always debrief a student before they walk into that. But when they get there, like, oh, this is what they were talking about. I see this. This is how this works and why this is why we're here. And they find a higher purpose and a higher calling. There are so many students who would go on mission trips with me several years in a row, and then they would leave and go on their own mission experiences, their short-term trips with YWAM or ACTS or whatever organizations. There's so many different ones where they felt this calling, like, I need to take a portion of my life and give it to something greater than myself. Mm-hmm. And I get pushback from parents sometimes because their kid wants to do this, and they're like, I really think they should have college. Like, I get that, and I understand that, and education is very important. Mm-hmm. But your kid's not sure if he wants to be an accountant or a psychologist, and those two things don't work together. So they might figure something out if they take a break, just 6 months, and go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's not for everybody. But I know that there are some kids who, you know, they graduate, they've got this bug, like they want to keep on and go deeper into this thing apart from being on a student trip. And now as a young adult, they want to go and they find more calling and more understanding. Even if they come back, they figure out more things quickly. There's more maturity. There's less changing your major and changing schools. And there's something to be said for that, that you've done this maturing very quickly. It's expedited the process. And in 6 months, you've learned more than your first 2 years of college and what you want to do with your life.
Awesome. So we talked a little bit about before prepping a team before you go. So while you're there, what are some guidelines or thoughts around being on the ground in a different culture with a group of young people?
Yeah, I think as a leader for youth missions, there's a couple of things that you need to do. One is be very selective on the adults you take, especially if you're a young youth minister or youth pastor. Taking students out of the country, you're often viewed as young and dumb, and maybe you are, but leave it up to your, you know, your pastor or your leader, your higher up to determine that. But be selective. You don't want to take an adult who's going to be a helicopter parent, or you don't want to take an adult who is going to go against everything that you want to do or that the missionary wants to do, or who's going to be uncomfortable with getting a little dirty, like when you have to do something, who isn't going to be flexible. Take someone who's going to champion the students take someone who can be their friend, who can help you steward their hearts as you go. Mm-hmm. Someone who has a missional and ministry mindset rather than a babysitting mindset. You want to set students free to do some things without having the other adult who, and I'm not, maybe I did things I should have done on mission trips, but like having the other adult to say, no, we probably shouldn't do that. You know, use wisdom in all things. How about that? But so find those people. I remember one mission trip, I was taking a group of students and I had all these girls who were like ballet dancers and actors and were heavy in the arts. And that's not me. I'm not that guy. And so I had to find, you know, a female adult who was of that vein, who could really minister to those girls and see their hearts working and playing out in the context of where we were going. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this adult would not have been my first pick for other trips, but because of the group of kids I was taking, I felt like this person would be so good at walking these group of girls through this trip. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I selected him. And then inversely, I had another guy come on the trip because he was such a big brother to the other guys come on the trip, that there was this gap that he could bridge between me and these students. And he and I worked well together, gelled well together. And so I brought him on. He was a former student who graduated. And that was the purpose, was to be the big brother to these younger high schoolers on this trip. And you just got to figure out your formula for which adult is best to bring and which adult is not. And yeah. And it's hard to tell an adult, because we used to have adults like, oh, yeah, I want to go there with you. And be like, no, I mean, we've already got our adults. I'm sorry. You know, and you weren't invited. And you say it more tactfully than that.
So it needs to be strategic is what you're saying.
So be strategic in the adults you bring on the trip. Mm-hmm. Someone who's flexible, who can get dirty and still minister to students. But when it comes to the intentionality of students, I'm always checking every student every day, hopefully every day, will always hear from me. How are you doing? You doing okay? Man, that's a heavy bag of concrete you're carrying. You all right? Mm-hmm. And so the questions that you kind of ask every day, how are you? How are things? Are you missing home? Are you sleeping okay? And then the one you have to ask the whole group at one time is, are you pooping?
Essential.
Because that will manifest itself in different ways. They'll either be normal, or they'll stop, or they'll be too much. And all of those things are important to know. And it's so funny, like, especially, you know, you take girls on trips, and it's just obviously not discussed. Guys have no problem telling you how things are going. But the teenage girls, at the end of the trip, like last day, some other girl will come up to you and say, Jenny's having issues. And it's been that way since the second day we were here. It's like, oh, that's why she looks like death. Let's get her some help. I was asking her what was wrong, and she wouldn't say. But so that's another, it's very, I know it sounds silly, but it's a very important question.
Absolutely.
How you pooping? You know, on a trip, you always set the expectations. Every morning, you set the expectation for what's happening that day. You get everybody in line. If there's a certain group of kids that's doing their thing, then, hey, you're up today. This is the day you're teaching. You feel good? How you feel about this? You know? And then you take a moment and you pray for that student before they have to do this massive thing that steps them out of their comfort zone, right? So always being intentional with students, always being accessible. I will tell you, one thing I tell my teams every time before we go somewhere is about the middle of the trip, Robert's going to get real snarky and he's going to get a little testy and he's going to say things.
But does it happen till the middle of the trip?
Raise his filter. It's usually right in the dead center. And it's just a day that happens every time. And I let people, like, and they know that going into it. So it's not like, oh, Robert's weird today. It's like, this is that day, he said. He hasn't slept. He's been traveling. And we're all punks. And this is him being that way. And I'm not inappropriate or terrible or cussing or doing any of that stuff. It's just, oh, Robert looks agitated. And then after that one day, I'm good. But it's always the middle of the trip. So as a leader, know that you're going to have a bad day, usually. Let your students know. We took a trip to Romania, and we got a great deal on flights, and it was such a good deal and so cheap that it took four planes to get there and four planes to get back. And so that was miserable. We should have just spent the money. But so we did that, and it took 48 hours to get there, and then once you land in Bucharest – like 6 hour drive or whatever it is out to Sigishora. And so I told the students a bunch of this, you're going to feel sick. You're going to have lots of gas and you're going to feel sick and it's just going to be a natural thing and you're going to have to be okay. Just know everyone's feeling it too. And so you always got to ask how, like after you've landed, everybody feeling miserable like I am? Yeah, good. We're all on the same page and everyone's okay.
48 hours to get there,
oh,
Robert.
Oh my gosh. So it was terrible. But it saved us some money, which was good in the long run.
Oh my gosh.
You know, I think one of the big things we do is just like when you're going into a trip, we always had some element of worship, some element of teaching, and then the practical stuff. Every night, when everyone's had dinner and everything's kind of calmed down for the day, there's always an element of worship. There's always an element of teaching. I always bring some kind of teaching. Even have nothing to do with their goal. We'll talk about Romans every night or something. There's something that will engage us on a spiritual level together as a group. It's devotional. It might even be long, but it's something that engages us there. And then here's what's happening tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I think if you keep that organization and it keeps people engaged, it keeps them ready for the next day. It helps them process what happened that day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big thing. If you go into a village and people are on dirt floors and people aren't eating, then that night it's not like, okay, today in Romans, we're going to talk about this and we'll have some worship and we'll go to bed. Like you need to spend some time saying, what'd you see? How'd you feel? What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
What is something that needs to be explained or what are some questions you have? And that is huge. I think for groups also, you know, you try to build that cohesion beforehand and sometimes it doesn't work. You get there and you realize this group is not as tight as I hope they would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I had two mission trips where that was the case. One was with students where the guys on the trip were, what's a good way to put it? We're being chauvinistic and the girls were, being stronger than them. And so we went to the store one day and we bought a bunch of, we were staying in a house that we had rented for this trip where we were kind of, it was our home base. And so we bought all this food at the grocery store. I get back, all the guys run off and I don't know what they're doing, but being guys and the girls like help me unload the groceries. And I was like, this doesn't sit well with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and a lot of that was because the guys didn't want to associate with the girls and the girls didn't want to associate with the guys. There was this huge divide. Well, that day we had bought all this pizza that we were going to cook for the week. And it was 10 o'clock at night, and I was talking to the guys and telling them, they were all downstairs with me, and the rest of the girls were in the rooms. And I was telling them how things were going to have to change. And so I had this man talk with chivalry and all this, you know, whatever. And then one of them was like, can we have some pizza? Because they were paying attention. And so I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. So we take out like a pizza and I'm like, you know what? Go get the girls. We'll all eat pizza together. And so that whole night we cooked all the pizza for the week. We all sat around and ate and talked. And it was from then on, there was no issue. Mm-hmm. There was no pizza, but there was no issue like amongst the group.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing, like one of my favorite things to do on a mission trip, and this was with a group of college students. There was some disconnect, just people not getting along as punks do. And so we were sitting in a room and I was tired and it was late and people were talking and we were trying to have a briefing before the next day and we were wrapping up and it just felt stale in the room and like people weren't on board. And so I said, we got one more thing. I just want to ask this question. Feel free to answer it if you want to. If you don't, don't. And I said, but everybody, we're going to go around the room and I'll start. The question is, what's your greatest insecurity?
Mm.
And then I talked and gave my greatest insecurity. And so that's leading from a place of being uncomfortable and kind of burying your soul in front of everybody. And so we just went around the room and everyone gave their most vulnerable piece of information, you know, at least that they would let go of in that spot. And it brought like this cohesiveness of just burying each other as here's who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that was maybe the second night of the trip. And after that, it was just gold. The way they worked together. The way everyone saw each other changed and the way that they loved each other and participated. And I still love to do that. Ask random people who don't know me that well, like, what's your greatest insecurity? And it's so weird because a lot of people answer that question.
Hmm.
Yeah, try it. It's fun. But it's something I do now with most like teams is ask that question at some point because I've seen the way it just people answer it And it brings everybody together. Like, oh, we're flawed, and but we're okay with each other.
Yeah, that's a tool you can take in lots of other areas of life, not just serving short term. That's something that's awesome. You see people as people when you share something like that. So
I'm going to do it at the next corporate conference meeting. See how well it goes over.
Oh, my gosh. Yep. That's awesome. Any other thoughts about while you're there?
Always visit the local market. Always eat the food. I know I'll get some pushback on that, but just talking with, and there's so many instances you'd be in someone's house, you're praying for someone or evangelizing or working with kids, and someone will be so grateful, they'll bring you what they have. Mm-hmm. They'll cook you a meal and it's all they got for that day, or they'll give you a drink, a juice or something, and that's all they've got for that day. Mm-hmm. And that's like their thing. And if you turn it down, that's not okay to me. Mm-hmm. And so it's always, this might hurt me later, but thank you so much for this, and I'm going to drink it right here.
Exactly, because they're showing extreme hospitality and kindness, mm-hmm, and service to give whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so you need to show honor too. I think that creates a culture of honor by saying thank you and a gratefulness, regardless of whatever it is. Yeah, when Brady, my husband, went on his first trip to Romania, he doesn't eat like anything, not even here. And so when we went, we had long talks where we went about how, like, you just have to eat food, like eat the food. And that's still something that he really struggles with, and why he won't go to certain places that I get to go throughout the year. But there's something about food and a culture of like honor that comes around food and around the table. And so I think that that is so, so important that, mm-hmm, you take what's being offered to you as a sign of honor.
That's probably, I think when taking students, it's probably the biggest point of contention I've ever had with students is you're going to eat everything on your plate. This is all they had, and this was going to be theirs, and now it's yours.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to take it out from in front of you and eat it. Like, mm-hmm, they're just done for the day. And so you have to eat all this food. And like watching these poor little teenage girls, and it's so, you go to Central America, it's so much food, so much rice, and it's so thick. And if you eat it too fast, they'll put more on your plate. And so it's just the point of just kind of suck it up and do it. And mm-hmm, when they're not looking, scrape it off onto his plate. but being, you gotta be sneaky. I don't want them to see that. And so that's such a hard thing for us. That was probably, when you go to Central America with my students, that was the hardest thing they had to overcome, was just eat all the food they give you. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, after a couple of meals, you're like, I can't. There's nowhere else.
I don't eat this much at home.
I know, yeah. You're 4 feet tall and 46 pounds, but you got to find a place for it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, eat the food. And then while you're there, you've got to debrief coming back, or you've got to brief coming back. And because you're going to come back, and not everybody's going to understand your story. Not everybody's, you're going to have this, man, this happened and this happened, and God did so much here, and I was able to do this. And everybody's going to like smile and nod, and mm-hmm, you're like, that's good for you. That's great. Yeah. And they're not going to have that excited response that you're looking for. Unless you've just got one of those grandmothers that does that. but I don't. So you got these moments where you'll come back and you'll start to reprocess things and think on things, you'll have more questions, and just let them know. I mean, if reverse culture shock you think is going to be an issue, they need to know that before they get there and experience it. Let them feel that ahead of time. Like, hey, these people don't have anything, probably won't eat for another day. But you're going to go home and walk into the store and see everything's at your fingertips, and you're going to feel weird about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay that you feel weird about it. And then, so doing that, being sure you just kind of cap off everything that happened, what you've seen, how that might affect you moving forward, and how after we get back, we will all meet again and talk some more. But these are some things you're going to experience. Don't come home and eat a whole pizza by yourself. You'll feel sick, mm-hmm, like you used to do. And then for me in my groups, I would go and I would give everyone some kind of word of encouragement, like as our last thing. One thing we do is we would ask students to bring a journal or something. They can, chronicle what's going on the whole time. But then at the end, they take their journal and they go to a blank page and they write their name at the top. And then you set like a 60-second timer and you pass it to the person and they write something about the name at the top. And you pass, mm-hmm, it again. You go all the way around the room. By the time it gets to you, you've got these words of encouragement from your teammates. And it's just something you can look at to take home with you of like, this is what God has done. This is how people saw what the Lord did. And this is how much this meant to someone. Mm-hmm. And you have this, everyone's journal is filled with 60-second blips mm-hmm. of encouragement for you. And then I go around and give everybody, you know, some word of encouragement. Even the punks who I should have sent home, you can always find something golden in somebody when you're looking at them through the eyes of God, right? Because mm-hmm. he loves them even though you want to kick them. And and so that's kind of how I end all my trips, with something like that. It kind of seals it for them, makes them feel like they were part of something bigger than themselves. Mm-hmm. There are some students that just don't have that God moment until that last meeting. Like, well, that's why you were here, so people could love on you and you could feel this. And so that's always a sweet time. That's kind of how I cap it.
That's awesome. When, after you come home, obviously, you know, what I kind of, in our conversations, I've seen the goal of short-term missions with youth is it's a step in their discipleship process. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, while it is, you want it to be all about serving the missionaries and that. And so you're a part of that. And it's also part of discipling this group of this next generation. And so after you come home and they've had this experience, where do you take discipleship after that?
Wow. That's a good question. Where do you take it after that? A lot of it just kind of happens naturally. It's very organic after that. One thing I've always tried to do is take and not pressure, but encourage students who feel like, you know, they're in the youth group, but they don't feel like they're a real big part of the youth group. They feel like kind of an outlier. Like they haven't been way to like chip their way in to just the harshness of other punks. And so if you can get someone that feels that way onto a mission trip, that just drops immediately. And so they feel more comfortable with who they are. They feel more comfortable to step out. They feel like more of a part of the group. And it builds that cohesiveness with everybody else very quickly. And you'll see them step into other leadership roles after that they wouldn't have done otherwise. Mm. And so when it boils down to doing this for their development and pushing them further, it's an organic thing that then discipleship becomes them wanting more. You know, your how does the saying go? Let your hunger, let the depth that you go be determined by the hunger that you have. And so they get hungry for more. They want something more. And so the conversations and the questions and the thoughts all start coming. And so by the time they start word vomiting on a Sunday night or a Bible study, you're like, we should probably meet just you and me mm-hmm. and discuss some of this stuff. And that becomes discipleship, just living life together when they're experiencing so much and God is coming at them from so many different angles and the perspective and the filter with which I see everything shifts, then they have this just thirsty stance of just wanting to take in what they can. Mm-hmm. And that just is an organic thing that just requires discipleship. And, mm-hmm. And it puts them at the feet of Jesus and they just go so much deeper when they know there's so much more. And even after they experience something, they like, this is just the tip of the iceberg mm-hmm. for what God has for me, what I can experience. And so discipleship just becomes second nature. A lot of times after a mission trip, it's just, they want to go so much deeper and they want so much more. And this new experience, it's rare that you have a student who goes on a mission trip and then just doesn't show up until the next year because there's another mission trip. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have students that do that for big events, show up for the big event, not come back to the next big event. Mm-hmm. But when they've been given that opportunity, when they've seen that depth and the way the Spirit moves and like the practical application of the Bible coming to life, then they just can't get enough. And that fuels them for a long time. Longer than any youth camp. You know, youth camp highs are great and they can push you forward into the next school year. But when someone comes back from a mission trip and they've seen like the breath of God on other people and in their lives, that's fuel for a while. Mm-hmm. And that cultivates a level of discipleship that they just want and will go after and ask you for. And mm-hmm. they'll ask until they get someone. And hopefully you've got to be the right voice yeah. at that right time. So I think that's the best way to answer your question.
Yeah, that's awesome. So why should people engage in youth ministry? Why does it matter?
Because they're going to be voting soon. And that is and is not the answer. Obviously, if you look at politics, your vote will mean one way or another. But no, because there was an article that came out, I think it was Reuters, if not someone else. I remember seeing it and thinking, well, this is not like, this is not just a tabloid. This is a real article. And it was that this generation that's in middle and high school now is the first post-Christian generation of the United States, mm-hmm. which means we've gone past where church means anything, mm-hmm. where a walk with God means anything. And one of my favorite trips to take students on was to Scotland, and it was not a hard trip. Like, they're not looking at poor people. They're not, like, everyone's eating, you know. The cuisine may not be that good in Scotland. It's not France or Central America. But because they are considered a post-Christian nation, or less than 10% are churched and less than that have a relationship with Jesus, you're talking to someone about God. And it's like for the first time, they've got answers to questions they've always had. And their eyes light up. It's like an unreached people group. Mm. You know, let's give a definition to what you're experiencing and how it can be different. And it's just easy to minister. And that's what you're seeing with this new group of kids coming up. It could be our first post-Christian generation where we no longer have a foundation of morals related to a God, but morals related to what I think is right. Mm-hmm. And we all are now able to interpret right from wrong based on our own experiences, mm-hmm. rather than a Bible or a scripture or a religion. Mm-hmm. And that's why you've got to get involved. And 50% of those who are in youth groups today will turn from Christianity when they reach college. Wow. And that is staggering and harsh.
Yeah.
And when I read that statistic, I started taking my high schoolers through, you know, some apologetic stuff once a year. And because that hurts to think about, mm-hmm. that 50% of the room I'm looking at on a Sunday night when I'm preaching is going to fall away in college.
Yeah.
And that means I'm not doing a good job. Mm-hmm. And that means our leaders aren't doing a good job. It means that our professors are winning the arguments that we aren't giving them a foundation for.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to change the rhetoric. And that's why you have to work with students. Timothy was a lost Greek boy until Paul showed up. Mm-hmm. His mother wanted so much more for him. But until Paul showed up, he didn't have that man to come along, this boy, to give him more and to give him explanations and to step into that father figure role. And without that, there's just a lost generation of boys. Mm-hmm. It's just so sad that you've got boys without fathers, or fathers who care, or even push them towards the right answers, who would be more willing to give their teenage boy a beer so they can hang out with him and give him a Bible so that they can find answers.
Mm-hmm.
And so things have to change. It has to be different because we're losing a whole generation of kids, and they're the young ones right now. And it's the same for girls growing up without fathers and mothers. Like, it's a sad existence that we're watching play out, and you have to give yourself to something greater. And the thing that's greater are those that are coming behind you. If you don't leave them with something greater than yourself to walk on and to achieve and build them the scaffolding of reaching answers and going after God, then they're starting in the basement already. And they can't get to the top floor of those things, and the basement becomes reality, and the dark things become normal, mm-hmm. and there's not more there. So that's why you have to get involved in youth group. Yep. That's why you have to take one student and give them everything you've got, if nothing else. One student, give them everything you've got. And discipleship just means living life. It doesn't mean you have to call them on a Thursday night, like, did you read 1 John today? No, it means like when you get angry and you face life issues and hard things, then you show them that and what it looks like and how to deal with that. And discipleship for Christ was just, hey, these 12 guys, just watch what I do. Mm-hmm. And then halfway through it, he was like, now you do it. Let's see what you got. Like,
yeah.
And in this instance, let's watch you feed these people, you know? And so that's what is so important. If you just neglect the students, then the students will neglect you, and they'll neglect God. Mm-hmm. They aren't given alternatives. They aren't given truth. They're not finding it at school or in college, sometimes even at home. Mm-hmm. I remember I was I was leading a youth camp, and there was this one student who kind of stepped over the line with some pranks. And so it became a point where he had to go home. And so it was a terror. I hated that, but he wasn't the only offender, but he was the one that just took it a step too far. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, he had to go home. And so I got to spend a lot of time with the student before his mom was coming to get him. And, And I just, in that moment, to him, I was the disciplinarian. I was the guy who was sending him home. But there were two men in his cabin who came up to me and waited with me and him and waited for his mom to get there. And he got more one-on-one discipleship and one-on-one prayer and one-on-one ministry from these two men than he'd ever had, that he would have ever gotten had he stayed at camp. And they found it like he doesn't have a dad. His mom is working two jobs. Like, it's a hard situation. And he didn't even live close to us, but one of the men was like, "You call me, I'll come get you. I'll take you to church." And he got more out of that one experience, just because two men saw a boy who needed a dad and just went after it. Yeah. He got more in that than he would have if he'd probably stayed at camp. So you have to be Paul to Timothy's. You've got to find the kids who are trying to find answers, because they're finding, they're seeking, and they're asking why and truth. They've been told to question everything, and that's okay. You can question everything, because eventually you'll have to question the thing that isn't truth, and then you'll find it. So you've got to invest and go after the students for sure.
This sounds like something that everyone should be taking part in, discipleship, you know?
I'm biased. I think so.
So what are ways that people can start? Let's say someone's not discipling anybody right now. What are some next steps they could take? They hear this and they think, man, I need to invest in the next generation. What can they do?
Kids are easy to find.
Just go down to your local school.
Yeah, just walk on to the high school campus anywhere, pick one, take them home.
Oh, my gosh.
Obviously, within reason. I would hope your church has a youth group. There is nothing greater to a youth minister than someone who's like, "What can I do just to help you make your job easier?" I know when I was a youth pastor, there was this gentleman, this father, who came in and just wanted to help. And he saw me running the words on the screen for worship, and he's like, "I'm going to do that from now on. You don't worry about that." And it freed me up to do so much more. Yeah. And one day I sat down with him and asked him a story. He was a youth pastor, used to be in the trenches with it, and told me like how everything went down and how his kids were. And he was like, "I just wanted to take one thing off for you that I knew that allowed you to minister rather than have to work on the administrative stuff or trudge through the extras." And I said, do that. Champion your youth ministers, even if they're young and dumb. They're so much closer to the reality of your student than you are. And the student will divulge so much information to them that they won't tell you. Mm-hmm. And you've got to trust that leader, that minister can. No, you don't have to trust. Like, God's put them there. There's so many times you have a conversation with a student, you're saying things like, "I don't know where that's coming from." I mean, it's just the grace of God giving you what you need for that moment. Mm-hmm. And so just help the youth minister, lead a small group. Every youth minister is looking for more people to come in and take this group of guys or this group of girls and give them more. Everyone needs someone. You know, your youth minister in the summer, usually, maybe not during COVID, but during the summer, is just stretched to the max with all the events and camps and everything they're having to do. Mm-hmm. That they would love for you to take one thing. And you know, youth ministers need to be able to give that up too. Mm-hmm. Like, trust that some of the adults in the room, some of the parents and leaders, have a lot of value in what they have to say and have seen more than you have probably, and can give you and the students a perspective on a topic or in an area that they have searched out, known, and lived through. If you want to work with students, it's not hard to find an avenue to work with students. Every high school, every Friday morning, has an FCA speaker come and talk to students with no restrictions, which is so good that there are still ministries that can walk on a student's campus, walk into a gym, preach the word of God, and then get out before the bell rings. Mm-hmm. And it's totally acceptable. And they need people to speak. They need people to share stories. They need someone to come along and even just sponsor, mm-hmm. Like an FCA meeting where they're like, "We just need someone to bring donuts one day." Do it. Use your resources and what you got. It's if you really want to, you can find it. It's not hard.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another great word from Robert McClendon. I'm so grateful for the way that Robert has spoken into my own personal life and learning about cross-cultural service as well as missions. And I'm so grateful that you guys are getting to hear from him now too. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out at chosenvesselsonline.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Instagram to keep up with what's going on in the CV world. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you next week.